he commanded me. "I'll take care of the front room. If I get desperate, I'll use that painter of yours." Mother picked up her mug, her hand shaking. She sipped once, then set the mug down. It seemed too heavy for her to hold. There were so many questions, so much to say. Where should I start? "Do you feel well?" I asked. She nodded once. "I require a nap these days," she said with a hint of her old self. "Imagine that, if you will." "Your mother is still recovering," Mrs. Luddington explained. "The doctors say it's a miracle she survived at all."
"Bunkum," Mother said.
Mrs. Luddington smiled. "It's not bunkum, Lucille." She turned to me. "Your mother joined us at the farm a few days after she sent you and your grandfather on. When she realized you were lost, she went wild."
"I was concerned," Mother said.
"We tried to keep her in bed. It was clear she was still quite ill. We sent messages to every town we could think of, but those who bothered to reply had not seen you.
Lucille was frantic. She rose at midnight and took one of our horses to search for you herself. We found her 2 days later, near death at the side of the road. It took weeks for her to recover."
"I'm much better now," Mother said. Mrs. Luddington shook her head in disagreement. "We came when we heard that President Washington was returning. Lucille said that would be the sign that your grandfather was waiting for. Where is the captain? I didn't see him when we came in."
"He died," I said flatly.
"Oh. Oh, my. I'm so sorry," Mrs. Luddington said. Mother looked into the fire. I waited for her questions, but there were none.
"Did the doctor prescribe any treatments for you, Mother?" I asked.
Mrs. Luddington jumped in. "She is supposed to live a life of leisure. Those were his exact words. The second attack nearly took her off to join your father. It damaged her heart."
She arched her eyebrows.
"She won't be able to run the coffee house anymore. She should sell it and buy a small house near us."
Mother pressed her lips together tightly. "We'll talk about that later," I said quickly. "Can I get you something to eat, Mrs. Luddington? Some stew?"
The farmer's wife stood up. "I promised my husband I would return today, and it is a long ride back. I must go."
I tried to convince her to stay the night, or at least take a meal with us, but she was determined. She bent over and hugged Mother briefly, said goodbye to me, and left. I peeked in the front room. A few customers had left. The rest were smoking their pipes and enjoying their conversation. Mother coughed.
"Is this your work or Eliza's?" she asked.
"Mine," I said as I sat down across from her. "I wanted to open again. Eliza wanted me to sell."
The clock ticked. "William is dead, then?"
The clock ticked again, then rang the hour. I waited until the noise stopped. "Yes, in September."
"Oh, Maddie."
Tears welled in Mother's eyes.
"Dear God, I was so worried. I couldn't find you, no matter where I looked. I searched and searched until I fell ill again. I couldn't sleep. I was so afraid you were..."
"I'm fine. I'm fine. Shh, please don't cry. Everything is better now. I'm home. You're home. You don't have to worry anymore."
I drew up a chair next to her, and she leaned against my shoulder. I cradled her head in my arms until her sobs quieted.
"Tell me how you fared," she said. "I can remember so little. And I've lost track of all the weeks."
I told her everything, from the time the death cart dumped her at the front door to the first frost. I didn't give her all the details of the intruders or the night Grandfather died. There would be time for that later, when she felt stronger.
Mother's eyes drifted back to the fire burning in the hearth. Her hands lay in her lap, withered and limp. I had never seen her hands stay still before. They had always been busy with cleaning or needlework or polishing. I had a sudden sense of what was to come, and I blinked away the tears.
"Help me upstairs, Maddie," Mother said. "I need to rest."
Epilogue. December 11th, 1793. We are devoutly to acknowledge that kind Providence hath restored our city to its useful state of health and prosperity. Petition of Citizens to the Council of Philadelphia, 1793. I opened one eye. A scratching noise in the corner of the room had woken me, the scrambling feet of a desperate mouse about to become breakfast for a lumpy orange cat. I winced as Silas pounced. The squeaking stopped. I rolled over to look out the window. It was dark still. The faint call of a watchman could be heard down 7th Street, and a few stars hung still in the sky. I burrowed beneath the warm weight of my quilt. My toes curled at the thought of crossing the icy floorboards on a dark December morning. Nothing gained by delay, I thought. No one else is going to get the house stirring. I snatched my stockings off the stool next to my bed and pulled them on under the covers, taking care not to disturb Nell, who slept beside me. Thank goodness she had learned not to wet the bed before the weather turned cold. I tucked the quilt around her and stood up, quickly changing into my clean day shift. I stepped into my woolen overskirts, laced my stays, and wrapped a heavy shawl over my bodice. Mother rolled over and snored quietly. She had coughed late into the night. It was good for her to sleep peacefully. I nudged Silas with my toe. The cat daintily picked up his breakfast and made for the stairs. I crossed the hall to the other bedchamber. Eliza stirred in her sleep, mumbling about ginger and nutmeg. Robert and William slept soundly, their arms wrapped around each other in their trundle bed, their chests rising and falling in unison. I crept down the stairs, careful to skip the squeaky ones. I dug out the embers from the ashes of the kitchen fireplace and laid tinder on them. The dry wood caught quickly, and the flames soon warmed my face and hands. I swung the kettle over the flames and looked into the fire while the water heated. Eliza would want to send the twins to fetch the day's newspapers. Mother would fuss, of course. She didn't think they were old enough to do anything besides raise a ruckus in the garden. The sooner we could afford a pony and cart, the better. That way Mother could run errands together with the boys, and Eliza and I could get some work done in peace. It would be nice to finish putting by the mincemeat before the snow came for good. Nell still refused to leave my side, but I didn't mind. The water finally boiled. I made a coffee for myself, a mug for Eliza, and one for Mother. I cut a lump of sugar off the loaf and added it, along with a healthy dollop of milk, to my mug. Being the first one awake did bring some privileges, I thought with a smile. Overhead, footsteps crossed the room. I hurried to set out the breakfast dishes before Eliza came downstairs. She didn't begrudge me a few minutes of quiet, but the table setting came first. When the crockery was laid out, I carried my mug through the front room, past the polished tables and backgammon boards, past the beautiful new painting of a meadow full of flowers. I backed up to adjust the painting so it hung nice and straight. Nathaniel was coming along nicely, Mr. Peel said. 3 years, maybe four, and he would be able to support himself. That wasn't long to wait. I opened the front door and sat on the step facing High Street. A lamplighter, some blocks down, reached up with his long pole to extinguish the street lamp. To the east, beyond the river, the stars faded before the promise of a new day. These solitary minutes each morning were fast becoming a habit. A good habit, but one I would soon need a woolen cloak to enjoy. The sky brightened to a dull bronze glow as the last of the season's geese rushed southward, flying so low I could hear the beat of their wings against the morning air. I drained the mug reluctantly and scraped my finger along the bottom to get the last of the undissolved sugar. Looking down the peaceful street, it seemed no one could imagine the terror we had all endured. There were many tables with empty places, or invalids, who had once been as strong as horses. But the sun continued to rise. People filled the street each day. On Sunday, the church bells rang. Philadelphia had moved on. Early morning was the only time I felt as if there were ghosts nearby, memories of the weeks of fear. That's when I found myself listening for Polly's giggle or Grandfather's voice. Sometimes they felt so close, close enough to tell me I should stop dawdling and get to work. I smiled as the mist faded. The yellow sun rose, a giant balloon filled with prayers and hopes and promise. I stood and shook the idleness out of my skirts. Day was begun. This concludes Fever 1793 by Laurie Hulse Anderson. Narrated by Bailey Carr. Copyright 2000 by Laurie Hulse Anderson. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Simon & Schuster Books for Young Readers, an imprint of Simon & Schuster Children's Publishing Division, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.